You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
May 15th marks the Palestinian Nakba, the catastrophe of the massive intentional expulsion of more than 750,000 Palestinian people from their homeland in 1948. The struggle to remedy that grave injustice, including the right of the refugees to return to their homeland, has continued for 62 years. Ali Abu Nima is part of that struggle. He is co-founder of Electronic Intifada, the premier English-language website devoted to the Palestinian search for justice. Ali has just returned from South Africa, where he met with solidarity activists and government officials there, and he joins me by phone from Chicago. Welcome again to Red Eye, Ali.
Thank you, Mordecai. It's my pleasure to be with you.
South Africa, the place where apartheid was defeated by a prolonged struggle that included an important component of international solidarity, that must be an inspiration for the Palestinian people.
Very much so, and for me it was my first visit and had a great deal of significance for me personally because we talk a lot about South Africa. We have for many years and drawn inspiration. So to actually go and to see the reality and to talk to people was really a wonderful experience. And I think going there, one understands two things. One, the enormity of the victory and the overwhelming difficulty of the struggle for liberation. And the other thing one understands is that colonialism and apartheid leave a pretty terrible legacy in terms of very deeply entrenched inequality. And so you have to really think about that up front in terms of the ongoing struggle for justice. But it was really wonderful to be there to see the artifacts of apartheid, not in the streets or in the townships, but in a museum. And in that sense, also visiting the Apartheid Museum to think how wonderful it would be when all of the artifacts and oppressive apparatus of Israeli apartheid are something that is consigned to a museum rather than the reality in people's lives.
What can you tell us about the solidarity among South Africans at the grassroots level with the Palestinian struggle for freedom and the effort to put Israeli apartheid, as you say, in a museum?
Well, there's a lot of very dedicated solidarity activists in South Africa, many of them who are themselves veterans of the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa. And so they have a very deep understanding of the similarities of the difficulty of struggle, and I think an equally deep commitment. So that was very inspiring. What was also clear, and people talk about this, is that the South African government itself and the ANC ruling party have not been particularly out front in terms of internationally supporting boycott, divestment, and sanctions on Israel. This is really coming from civil society, and the South African government has not been particularly bold in that respect, but they're trying to push, and recently I think there's been a few more cracks. But I suppose what surprised me is how much their struggle for, different and better government policies on this issue is not that dissimilar to what we face in Canada or the United States or other parts of the world. It really, I think, underlines for me both the global nature of the problem and the solution, that the policies are not necessarily made in each country separately, but we live in a world where a few countries dominate and the rest follow, and really the struggle to define a different path is one that we're all facing, I think.
So they, from what I take from what you've said, the struggle with among solidarity activists to support Palestinian anti-apartheid efforts is part of a much more, to bring their government to adopt that, is part of a much wider agenda to bring that government to be more responsive to the social needs as well of the people in the country, in their country.
I think so. I mean, I think that's the way a lot of people talked about it. At the same time, I met remarkable people like Ronnie Casserils, who is a former government minister, now retired, and who was a freedom fighter, a young South African Jew who at a young age joined the armed struggle, went into exile, really as part of the ANC was part of the struggle for many years, and returned to South Africa, was a minister in the government, and has now both while he was in the government and since has really been a very leading outspoken voice against Zionism and for justice in Palestine. And so, you know, there are, it's amazing to hear from people who've had that life experience and sort of bring it in a very respectful way, really understanding the meaning of solidarity to this issue. So also, you know, of course, I was there at the time when Goldstone, and the fact that he, Judge Richard Goldstone, was barred effectively from attending his grandson's bar mitzvah, that was going on right when I was there. And so it was interesting to see that debate playing out, and South Africa really finding itself in the center of international attention related to the issue of Palestine. So one of the really, if I can say, one of the moving things for me was visiting the District 6 Museum in Cape Town, which is really, a museum is the wrong word, it's much more sort of a living community center. But this commemorates a particular district of Cape Town, which was a mixed district called District 6. And on February 11th, 1966, the apartheid government declared it a whites-only area and went in with bulldozers and demolished virtually all the houses. And when you see the images and the stories and the narratives of the people who lived there and who are still very attached to their homes there, although they were expelled, it is so much like what is happening today in East Jerusalem in places like Silwan and Sheikh Jarrah, and of course so much like what has happened throughout 62 years of the Nakba. It's been a continuous ongoing process. And so that was very moving, because that place is dedicated not just to District 6, but to all people around the world who have been victims of what they call forced removal, or what we might call ethnic cleansing. So that was really a remarkable experience as well.
You mentioned the at the beginning of the interview the horrors that are left by colonialism, and certainly there have been many comments on the severe social inequities that still persist in South Africa despite the success in eliminating apartheid. And you're known as an advocate of a single state in historic Palestine, where Palestinians and Jews could live together with equal rights. What significance, if any, is there in the enduring social inequities in South Africa after apartheid for your vision of peace in Palestine?
Well, I think that the significance is there for any vision of peace. You know, some of the arguments I've heard recently as well, you know, a single state can't work, or look what's happened in South Africa, blacks have gotten poorer and whites have gotten richer, and this shows you that really it's not a solution. I think that's a completely sort of wrong or very simplistic analysis. You know, you look at Palestine today and you have similar gaps between Jews and Arabs in terms of you know, income. Israel has just been admitted to the OECD, a group of the world's 31 richest countries, but you know, people in Gaza are living on, you know, a few hundred dollars a year income in many cases, you know, just abject poverty. Within Israel, Palestinians on average are much, much poorer than Jews. You know, more than half of Palestinian citizens of Israel live in poverty, as compared with about 16% of Jews. So you have these tremendous and, in fact, growing economic disparities. And, you know, having a one-state solution or a two-state solution doesn't magically make those go away. In fact, if you declare Gaza to be a separate country, Israel just washes its hands of the problem and says, their poverty is their problem, it's not our responsibility. So I think what it tells you is that economic justice, restitution, and redistribution have to be really fundamental and central in any sort of just peace. And in South Africa, so much of what has happened, as I saw around Cape Town, you have these huge squatter camps that have grown up, just tremendously poor, you know, as far as the eye can see, almost new shanty towns that have grown up since 1994. And many of these people who are now living in these squatter camps are people who have migrated to the cities from the Bantustans since 1994. The Bantustans were these so-called independent black homelands in which the government forced blacks to move, the apartheid government, to kind of get rid of them, essentially. So the poverty of the Bantustans has been enduring, and people have flocked to the cities where there has been insufficient infrastructure, insufficient housing construction. And of course, during apartheid, people were not allowed to move. They wouldn't have been allowed to move to these areas. So this, in a sense, is a continuation of the legacy of apartheid, that the poverty of the Bantustans, the poverty of the black masses, has led to huge influxes of people into cities that really cannot cope with them. So this is something, of course, that you know, is a byproduct of apartheid, and you have to very closely study the lessons in terms of what has and hasn't been done to make this kind of transition sustainable and work for people. There's clearly a huge amount of work to be done in South Africa. But there's also a lot of people who are much better off in terms of their life prospects. What was amazing to me was to speak in universities in front of classes where you have, you know, people of absolutely every kind of background, and to think that just, you know, in their parents' lifetimes, this wouldn't have been possible. And what surprised me, too, was how the young people, at least in the universities that I met, many of them didn't have the sort of sense of the history of apartheid that I thought they would. In the sense, they resembled college students you might find in other parts of the world, that apartheid has receded into history. And I think that has its dangers, but at the same time, it shows that this is the past for them, and they have opportunities that were simply unimaginable to their parents. So it is a remarkable country, but one where I found people were also very much questioning, you know, where have we come from in the 16 years since the first democratic election, and where are we going? It's clearly very much a work in progress.
Well, our warm thanks again, Ali, for taking time to be with us on A Red Eye. Much appreciated.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Ali Abu Nima. He's co-founder of Electronic Intifada, the premier English language website devoted for the Palestinian people's search for justice. Simply Google Electronic Intifada.